I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Seattle was a fantastic host for the World Cup, but now it's back to reality. Plus, the West Coast leads the nation in unemployment as blue states tax job creators and wealth. And a bizarre stocking scandal hits a state Senate race. We'll discuss all the dirty details, that and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Credit where credit is due. Seattle was a fantastic host for the World Cup. It really was. And it was awesome to see the city so alive. Not the result, I think, in the final game that Seattle hosted that we all wanted to see, USA versus Belgium. Horrible game, in fact. But that was the last scheduled game that Seattle is hosting for the World Cup. And I would say without incident. I mean, the world celebrated how awesome Seattle was, and Seattle fans and fans across the region. The waterfront, how beautiful it is here. And I love to see that. And I know that I'm very hard on the city of Seattle, specifically politicians in Seattle, leading up to the game, certainly, you know, Katie Wilson, she's still just making bizarre decisions about public safety. In fact, she, like, now that the game is done, she already turned off the crime cameras down by the stadiums, which is just unreal. But a lot of bad things could have happened during the World Cup, given Seattle's crime issue, drug issue, homelessness issue, it being, you know, potentially a terror target, and it didn't. And Seattle really shined in the World Cup. But for any leader, the only legitimate question that they should be asking today is, how do we keep it up? How do we keep up this momentum? How do we finally deal with, in a meaningful way, the real challenges that the city of Seattle has? You know, we have to get past this bizarre trajectory we're on, where we clean up the city just when there's a major sporting event, be it the MLB All-Star Game, and then we let it go back to hell for, you know, a couple years. Then it's like, oh, now we've got the World Cup. And I have no reason to believe that it's not going to be the same thing that happened after the All-Star Game, which is it went back to the way it was and it even got worse. So any real leader should be saying, yes, this is a victory. We had a great showing to the world in Seattle, but we really have to get back to business. So that's what a good leader would do. Here's what Bob Ferguson does. He put out a couple posts yesterday after the final game wrapped up in Seattle. He said, 41 cities applied to host World Cup games, 32 advanced, 23 made a shortlist, and 16 cities across three countries were ultimately selected. It's not a surprise for those of us who live here, but it's been rewarding to see people all around the world come to appreciate what we all know. Among those most elite locations, Seattle and Washington State are the most world-class of all. He went on to share what he pulled from the Times. It says, from a Dallas resident visiting for USA versus Belgium in the Seattle Times. Quote, the buses are everywhere. The city is so walkable. You have one of the cleanest downtowns in America. The downtown is as incredible as any place in the world. And Bob Ferguson ends, world-class city and state. Gee. I mean, cherry-picking information, but for him to choose this quote that says, this downtown is as incredible as any place in the world. Can you have a downtown as incredible as any place in the world with a 37% vacancy rate in office buildings? Can you really, as the governor of the state, can you really say this in good faith and share this celebration that you have one fan from Dallas who called it the most incredible downtown of any place in the world and have a story that just came out yesterday in the Seattle Times with a 37% vacancy rate? I don't think you can call that an incredible downtown. And when he celebrates that this is such a world-class city, the city's so walkable, you have one of the cleanest downtowns in America. Could that be because you shoved all of the homeless drug addicts into the Chinatown International District? Could that be why this person from Dallas believes that we have one of the cleanest downtowns in America, which is just demonstrably false? During the World Cup, perhaps, But we know what happened during the World Cup. We did a big special report on it leading up to the World Cup. You push the homeless drug addicts in the markets of stolen goods up to Belltown and over to the Chinatown International District. And in fact, just as the USA-Belgium game wrapped up, Jonathan Cho was down in the Chinatown ID watching someone overdose on drugs.
Just like that, I just left the World Cup stadium here at 12th and Jackson, and just like that, another OD.
Yeah, and again, I don't blame the governor of our state for celebrating a successful World Cup run in Seattle. I don't blame him for doing that at all. My job is to be critical for a living, and that is the best use of my platform, is to be critical of those in positions of power and demand better from them. I'm not a cheerleader for the city of Seattle. I'm not a cheerleader for the state of Washington, and I'm not a cheerleader for any politician or any political leader. So I understand that the governor has a different sort of set of priorities, that he wants to celebrate the state and the city at all chance, at any chance that he can get, and he should. But to put forward this rosy picture, this is a world-class city, a world-class state. No, it can be, and it should be. And we have all the makings of a world-class city. We were once a world-class city. But it's just a lie to suggest and to share this quote, as if you agree with it, that we have one of the cleanest downtowns in America. That our downtown is as incredible as any place in the world. That can't be true while you have one of the worst homeless crises of any place in the world. That can't be true while you have one of the worst drug crises of any place in the world. That can't be true when you have 37% of the buildings and skyscrapers in downtown Seattle sitting empty because our economy is about to careen off a cliff. So real leadership is telling difficult truths as well. Real leadership is coming up with a plan to say, hey, this was a great showing for Seattle. What can we do to make sure that this continues to be a place where people want to live, a place where people want to visit, a place where people can come and work and walk around safely and not run into drug abusers and homeless people trying to sell them stolen merchandise to fuel their next high? So, like, let's take the good, but let's also understand the reality of what happened after the MLB All-Star game. And we will be watching what happens in downtown Seattle in the weeks to come very, very closely. How soon does the drug market return to 3rd and Pike? Are they going to do anything to stop that from happening? Are they going to address the situation that they worsened in the Chinatown International District? Are they going to address the situation that they made worse in Belltown? All of those things will factor into whether this is truly a successful summer for the city of Seattle. And meanwhile, again, not to be so negative after such a cool event, but what else is my platform good for if it's not to try to push positive change and to make sure that there's the appropriate warnings for what's happening? You know, it's not as if the underpinnings of what's happening in Seattle and Washington State are on the side of people who want to see our state and the city be successful, because the underpinnings are crumbling. The infrastructure that keeps up a successful economy is crumbling. Right now, Washington State has one of the highest unemployment rates in the nation. And it's not just Washington State. You look across the whole West Coast. There's a reason for that. The highest unemployment rate is technically D.C., but that's because President Trump was draining the swamp of unnecessary federal employees. But something very different is happening in Washington, Oregon, California. First of all, they've all started to target and tax job creators and the wealthy. They have made their states inhospitable environments to start a business and to continue to run a business. So right now in Washington State, we have a 5.2% unemployment rate. Again, one of the highest in the nation. And so even if you have now leaders who say, we really want to keep up this momentum from the World Cup, we want our city to look its best and feel its best all the time. Well, gosh, you know, we are starting from a pretty difficult place now to be able to do that, because jobs just aren't coming here. And the nice thing is, so liberals in Washington State, Democrats, you know, mandated these layoff notices that you've got to tell the state of Washington when you plan to lay off employees so people aren't just blindsided by it. The good news about that is they can't hide the numbers because they have that. They're all published by the Employment Security Department. They can't hide the numbers of jobs leaving the state, the number of layoffs, etc. And there is a new filing freaking every single day from the tech sector, Microsoft, Amazon. I mean, really across the board, a lot of these are in the tech sector. There's some related to education, but for the most part, tech jobs either laying off, downsizing, or fleeing the state. Two big headlines that just came out. Microsoft cutting 4,800 jobs, including many at Xbox, and a reset of its gaming division. And then Amazon cut 57 jobs, which might not sound like a lot, but a lot of those are executive-level jobs, which reflect sort of the overall downsizing and shift that Amazon has done. And again, you might say, well, you know, the tech sector is changing. And you'll see this, the Seattle Times blame just general changes in tech, AI innovations that are allowing them to downsize. You know, they upsized so much during the pandemic, like Amazon, everybody's getting stuff delivered at home, and now they have to implement layoffs. So let's just say, you know, this is something for a moment that's out of control, that's out of the control of elected leaders. Like the tech chef, we have an economy built on tech, and tech is changing rapidly. We can't do much about that. Okay, let's just say that that's true. And I think it's partially true, right? You know, AI is going to have a big dent, I think, in tech jobs here for sure. But even if that's true, then you have to make sure, right, you're doing everything you can to keep the jobs that are currently here and to try to open up new lanes of economic opportunity. You don't just say, the tech jobs are leaving. I guess we're screwed. I guess we're just going to have to tax our way out of this one, too. No, you better be damn sure that you're creating a positive environment for the other businesses that aren't tech to stay and to thrive. And you're not doing that. You passed the largest tax increase in state history, much of it on the backs of businesses. We have, as far as business taxes, we do a B&O tax on gross receipts. Very few states in the nation do that, which means that you're taxing businesses before they've even made a dime. Not to mention the capital gains tax, the new income tax on millionaires, which will soon be an income tax on everyone. So you're all blaming tech and saying, oh, we're losing all these tech jobs because of AI. You know, our hands are tied. Your hands are not tied. What you need to be doing is basically getting down on your knees and begging business owners to stay here and asking them, what can we do to make sure that you don't leave? Because now more than ever, we can't afford to see you go. We've got one of the highest unemployment rates in the nation, but they're just doubling, tripling down on all the policies that are making this just a horrible place to run a business. So, yeah, I mean, in short, Seattle can shine when it wants to shine. Seattle can be successful when it wants to be successful. And when leaders are able to push past, you know, certain narratives and talking points and do their jobs. And they were able to do that for the most part during the World Cup, although I would argue that pushing the homeless just out of the downtown core isn't really leadership. You know, it's just sweeping the problem from place to place. But Seattle is beautiful. All the things that make it beautiful are never going to leave. I mean, the mountain, hopefully, is not going to come, it's not going to blow up and disappear. The water and the scenery and all these wonderful things that make the city so walkable and fantastic, those things are here. But it takes a lot of political will to brush the other bad stuff aside so our city can shine and so our economy can shine as a city and as a state, and that goes for the entire West Coast. So we will see what happens from here, and we'll be paying a visit to Third and Pike to see how quickly the drug element returns now that World Cup fans are gone. All right, coming up next, this story is freaking bizarre. So there are accusations of stalking in a state Senate race and coordinated stalking that police say was spearheaded by the opponent of State Senator Nikki Torres. We'll get into all the crazy details first. If you're looking to save some money as a family, I mean, gas prices are pretty high right now. Everybody's feeling the pinch. Reach out to our friends at Firstmark Insurance and see if they can't save you a little bit of money on your insurance needs, because you got to have insurance anyway. And if you've just been letting it ride and just assuming that who's ever handling your insurance so far is getting you the best rates and then doing the same thing every time you go to renew, that might not be the case. Our friends at Firstmark Insurance are working for you, not the insurance companies. So they're going to make sure you have the right insurance. And that's a key. They want to make sure you're well covered. Not that you get some like cheap, cheapest you can get, and then something happens to something you've worked very hard for and you lose everything. No, that's ridiculous. So Firstmark is going to make sure you have the best insurance at the best price and is sort of balancing all of those things for you and your family. And they're going to go back proactively every year and make sure that you still have the best insurance at the best price. They did that for Mike and I this year, and we saved $2,000 on our renewal, which was just awesome. We didn't lift a finger. So firstmarkinsurance.com, Firstmark Insurance. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind. This is a doozy, okay? Headline from the Tri-City Herald. Police claim WA Senate candidate directed stalking of Tri-City opponent's family. Okay, let's dive into it. Kennewick's school board president and one of his campaign staffers are under investigation for allegedly helping a man stalk his political opponent. A Pasco police report obtained by the Herald on Thursday says Gabe Galbraith and Benson Behan with the Benton County Republican Party are part of an open criminal investigation into claims of harassment and stalking of State Senator Nikki Torres. I should note that Undivided has also obtained this police report and reviewed it independently. It says Trevor DeLorme, 21, of Kennewick, appeared in court last week on stalking charges after he was caught outside a home owned by Torres. The investigation says Galbraith paid him $80 for gas money, and phone records allege he coordinated and directed operations and requested photos of his opponent's family vehicles. All right, we're going to get into a lot of details of this. Let me just break down the players in this saga, okay? So you have the victim, State Senator Nikki Torres, and I would really argue her family members are victims in all of this as well, both her daughter and her granddaughter. And then you have Gabe Galbraith, who we've had on the show before, talking about school board issues. He is running against State Senator Nikki Torres in the 8th Legislative District. And then you have Benson Behan. He's like a political flack who works for Gabe Galbraith, okay? And then you have this Trevor DeLorme. And these images of Trevor are from the Tri-City Herald. And he is the actual, I guess, what would you call him? The muscle? I'd hate to call him the muscle. It doesn't look very muscular, but he's the suspect. He's the individual who allegedly carried out this stalking on behalf of Gabe Galbraith at the direction of Benson Behan, okay? So let's continue on some background here of why are they stalking Nikki Torres? What's the goal here? It says Galbraith, president of the Kennewick School Board, he's also campaigning for state Senate for the seat occupied by Kennewick Republican Matt Behnke, who's seeking a different office. He's running for Congress. The home involved in the stalking case is owned by Torres, but rented out to her daughter and granddaughter. Torres lived in the address when she served on the Pasco City Council, but after a redistricting battle in federal court changed legislative boundaries and drew her out of that district, she contemplated running for other seats before again moving to a different home in February to be within the 8th Legislative District. Some Republicans have tried to prove that Torres does not live at that new address, but rather she lives at this house that her daughter's living at. So does that make sense? So there was that redistricting battle. Remember, they redistricted like the only Latina state senator out of her seat in the name of equity, which was weird. So she had to decide, you know, does she continue to sort of, or does she look, seek a different office? But she ended up moving to a different home within the 8th Legislative District. But it sounds like what her opponents want to try to prove, or what they believe to be true, is that she's actually living in the house that she'd been living in all along, and that that house is not actually being rented and solely occupied by her daughter and her granddaughter, okay? So that's where the stalking and the let's stake out the house sort of thing comes into play. But this got really intense. So, of course, the guy arrested again is Trevor DeLorme. Clearly wasn't a criminal mastermind for it to be very obvious that he was frequent in this residence. So it said after DeLorme's arrest in April, he gave a jailhouse call to someone close to the Benton County Republican Party. Behan, the future party secretary, answered on the other line, according to reports. DeLorme gave Behan the bad news. He had been caught outside the home owned by Torres, and police arrested him. He asked Behan if he and others would help him out with bail. Behan said they would figure something out if he wasn't released. So this suspect, he's calling the other campaign, the opposing campaign from jail, like, bad news, I got arrested. Are you guys going to help bail me out? I don't know why people can't figure out that all jailhouse calls are recorded. Like, actually, how stupid are you? Okay. Goes on to say, DeLorme then told Behan police had seized his cell phone. Oh, shit, Behan allegedly said to DeLorme over the phone. DeLorme expressed frustration, but Behan assured him they would be in support of him. As DeLorme was taken into police custody on April 30th, Behan, in a group message between the two and Gabe Galbraith, the actual opponent, the state Senate candidate, told him, quote, not to mention anything related to the campaign, Gabe or myself, if you can. Will do, DeLorme reportedly said before his arrest. So this guy's like, you know, shoot, I'm getting arrested, sends off a text. They're all in this text that police now have. And the political flacky for Galbraith is allegedly saying, don't mention us by name. Don't mention Gabe. Don't mention the campaign. Basically, lie to the police or withhold information to the police. So this became pretty intense because I will say, opposition research isn't like against the law, right? There's a lot of ways that people try to dig into and dig up dirt on their opponent. But given the fact that Nikki Torres, and she maintains she's not living there, she's renting the house to her daughter and her granddaughter. So this became allegedly some very intense stalking, not of a politician, but of a politician's daughter and granddaughter, which I think everyone agrees is totally off limits. So it says, to establish a consistent watch, Behan directed Trevor, the suspect, to maintain a persistent physical presence at the target location, specifying certain times of day. He described this physical presence as, quote, the most integral thing at this point, noting that while daytime surveillance was optional, it would serve to strengthen their case. Behan later told Delorme to kick it into overdrive so they could get Torres on camera. Police say the communications indicated a tight deadline to gather evidence before Torres filed paperwork to formally run in early May. He ordered Delorme to gather as many pictures as you possibly can get and collect physical evidence such as mail, if possible, which again, if that was out of a mailbox, that is a federal crime. He emphasized that they needed to do everything possible to capture Senator Nikki Torres on camera. They discussed sending an operative under the guise of a salesperson with plans to print out fake business cards. Behan reportedly suggested using his family's flower business to execute a fake flower delivery. So they are there night and day, talking about taking mail to see if it's coming to Nikki Torres or someone else, printing up fake business cards to send someone to the door to see who answers. This guy's mom, this Benson Behan's mom, owns a flower shop in town. So it's like, let's send a flower delivery and see who comes to the door to get it. It's insane. And there's a lot of photos being taken. Again, not of Nikki Torres, of her daughter and her granddaughter. It says police reviewed at least 91 photos of surveillance from Delorme's cell phone. The photos were taken of a Pasco house, its occupant, Torres's daughter and granddaughter, and her daughter's vehicle. Text communications between the parties had Delorme requesting thought for a position with the political group. So he's doing this work for them. They're giving him money to do it, allegedly. And he's saying, hey, could I get a job with the party or something after this? So he thinks, what, that this is some sort of audition for a job with, what, the Benton County Republican Party? Says Torres's adult daughter would go on to tell officers that she was deeply scared for her safety and the safety of her child as a direct result of this continuous physical surveillance around her home, as anyone would be. As anyone would be if somebody was stalking outside the home night and day, taking pictures of her, taking pictures of her daughter. So again, as we look at the sort of players in all of this, Nikki Torres was the target, but I would say her daughter is more so the victim. Now, Trevor Delorme is facing this charge of stalking, but clearly this was being directed by other people. So police also looking into the political flackey, Benson Behan, and Gabe Galbraith, who is running for state senate, who has the endorsement of at least one county Republican Party, and certainly some of the infrastructure of the Republican Party. So I think the best path forward for this is crazy. I think the best path forward is for the Attorney General's office to take over the investigation. Because look, it's a small world out there. You get into these political circles in these counties, and prosecutors and all this stuff, I think just to avoid any sort of conflict of interest, any sort of political loyalties, I think the Attorney General's office should and can take this case over to investigate whether there need to be charges against Galbraith, Benson Behan, obviously Trevor Delorme. That's happening at the county level as well. Now, we have reached out because we've had Gabe on the show. Gabe has always been very nice to us. We've had him on the show. He sent us news tips and things like that. And Nicole, you have not heard back from Gabe?
No, or the campaign.
Yeah, or the campaign or the Republican Party. Benton County Republican mm-hmm. Party. And really, we should reach out to Jim Walsh of the state Republican Party as well, because I can't imagine that the state party would condone this sort of behavior against anyone, but let alone against a sitting Republican state senator. You know, when you realize after how many hours of surveillance or whatever it is, and I'm not saying somebody can't drive by the house and see if they see Nikki Torres coming in and going. I think that's something that any campaign in America would do if they thought or they, you know, got word that a candidate might not be living where they say they're living. Like, how are you going to prove that, right? But taking pictures of someone's daughter and granddaughter, taking pictures of their vehicle, stalking their home, coming up with ways to go to the door and get pictures of them, it is so far beyond what should be accepted in a civilized society and in an American political campaign. So we will absolutely share the responses that we get from the individuals implicated in all of this. I did reach out to Senator Torres this morning, and she said while the investigation is ongoing, she's been directed not to talk about it any further. And so obviously we'll respect her wishes on that. But just a bizarre saga in a state Senate race. You guys, we're not talking about the presidency. We're not talking about Congress. It's a freaking state Senate race. And these people are paying some guy to go sit outside a house. And it's just absolutely insane. This is the state of things. And R&R. Can you stop the R&R nonsense? We're in a state with one party rule. They're getting dangerously close to a supermajority. And you guys are so vicious in your ranks that you're going to go sit on some a state senator's daughter's house and take pictures of her and her kid. Give me a break. Absolutely outrageous. All right. And to be fair, I would also oppose it if they were doing it to a Democrat and a Democrat's child and granddaughter. That would be outrageous as well. If you're thinking about leaving the state of Washington or just moving to a different place, maybe downsize, and reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. And although the market is a little odd right now, Wes says you can get the same results. You might just have to have a different approach or put a little more work into making sure your listing stands out. Evan W. gives Wes 5 stars. This was a tough multifamily transaction with a buyer who was often unreasonable and difficult. Wes stayed professional, kept the deal together, pushed it to the finish line when it could have easily blown up. That takes experience and grit. I appreciate the effort. Look forward to the next deal. That's from Evan W. So what I would do, because there's so many homes on the market right now, and they're taking a little longer to sell because it's just flush with homes and a lot of people moving out, not as many moving in, reach out to Wes and say, hey, you know, what's going on in my neighborhood specifically? What can I expect with my home? And what can we do to make sure that my home stands out? This is what Wes specializes in. Their marketing is second to none. Go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell their home. And their listing boost concierge service is something you're not going to find a lot of other places, where you can come in, do cosmetic upgrades, and make sure you don't have to pay for it until closing. That's just another thing that's going to get more feet in the door during open houses. Sellwithwes.com. All right, with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. It is astonishing to me that Democrats in Olympia haven't been willing to put their pride aside to save babies from dying. You know, we have now for what, 2-3 years been advocating for and been covering this issue with the Keeping Families Together Act, which again was passed on a bipartisan basis several years ago. And it basically said the goal is to try to keep families together. So it kind of raised the threshold for a judge to be able to remove a child from a home where there's active substance abuse happening. But what that resulted in is kids being exposed to a deadly drug like fentanyl in the home and dying. And it was like, oh, well, we want to keep the families together, so we'll just let kids be in homes where there's a drug that can kill you in microscopic quantities, can kill an adult in microscopic quantities, so can kill a child much easier. And that's like, is that keeping families together? Now the child is dead. And so you've had this whole trajectory with Democrats where they want to decriminalize and destigmatize substance abuse. And I get it. Like, we want people, and I agree, the first priority should be getting people help. That's the priority number one. Get them help for their addiction so they can lead productive lives, not be a leech on society. It's better for all of us in the long run. But you can't do that at the expense of children. You cannot do that at the expense of innocent kids. And Republicans, even the ones who voted initially for the Keeping Families Together Act, they have now realized that, right? The real dangerous consequences that this had, the number of children that have died in the custody of the state or, you know, living in arrangements through the state of Washington has grown exponentially. And so the numbers show that this needs to change. There was a march that took place. The group is called Keeping Kids Safe. And part of it, We Heart Seattle founder Andrea Suarez has been really involved in this as well. In fact, you'll recall that she was handing out flyers for this march to get people to join and participate to raise awareness for this issue and what's happening to kids. Remember, she was handing out flyers outside a No Hate in WASD 8 event, and a Democratic political operative ripped one of them up and threw it in the trash. Yeah, that's what this was. But it's basically raising awareness, you know, having families come to the march to talk about their children who have died or children close to them who have died, and trying to get Democrats and Republicans before the legislative session to come together and come up with a plan to change the Keeping Families Together Act in a meaningful way. This is what Andrea posted on X. Babies are dying from exposure to fentanyl and meth in Washington state. Heartbroken families marched to the governor's mansion asking Governor Bob Ferguson to keep kids safe. Here's how you can help. Write your legislator too. And this is what we need to do. We need to talk about every single day. You know, it's one thing to complain about it during the session and to complain about bills stalling out. But, you know, all year long, this is something that I know all of us care about. And so urging Democrats and Republicans to get an early start on trying to fix this before the session begins. So Andrea gives three ways that you can help. Remove the word imminent. So write your legislator, urge them to support bills that remove the word imminent from the threshold of imminent physical harm and incorporate other forms of harm such as neglect. So basically making it easier again for judges to remove a child from a home where there's fentanyl or meth in the home. She said, ask your legislature to say that illegal substance abuse constitutes risk of harm to a child because, of course, children aren't safe around drugs. And then safe staffing saves lives. Give frontline caseworkers the staffing they need to protect kids. And I think that's important as well, making sure the Department of Social and Health Services is staffed appropriately to be checking in on these kids. You know, if you're going to keep families together and you're not going to take them out of a home where there's substance abuse, like the least you can do is be checking in on a regular basis, you know, to see how the kid is doing around their drug abusing parents. Here are some clips that Andrea captured from this march.
Keep kids safe. Keep kids safe! Keep kids safe!
All right, we're here with We Heart Seattle, Battlefield Addiction, Keep Kids Safe, Jim Walsh. We have men and women and grandmas who've lost their children to fentanyl overdose or fentanyl-related deaths. We're out here marching to the governor's mansion, asking for just a very simple change in the language to make fentanyl an imminent danger to a child.
The trouble is imminent harm has been interpreted by the courts so narrowly that the kid can remain in a troubled situation with drugs or with violence or with criminal activity, because imminent harm means unless the CPS worker can show that the child is going to be like physically hurt right then, they can't move them out of the house.
I've spent $30,000 trying to keep her safe, and she's still with her addict mom. Every time we went to court, we were in front of a different judge, and I'm pretty sure none of them actually went through the paperwork. And not one time did her addict mother follow through with any of the court orders, and she still got her back.
Governor Ferguson, I'm standing here tonight with families who have buried children. I'm standing here tonight with grandmothers, mothers, aunts, uncles, foster parents, social workers, and representatives of our state. And I am begging you, Governor Ferguson, not one more child needs to die on this issue. Please save our kids.
Yeah, what are we doing? What is even the slightest bit controversial about this? And there have been a few Democrats who have worked really hard to try to fix this. State Rep. Mari Levitt is one of them, who's worked close with Rep. Travis Couture to try to change the law. But there hasn't been a lot of meaningful progress on this. And so I think let's get an early start on it. Let's make sure that this is something that gets done this session. So I would say email your state lawmakers, your state representative, your state senator, email the governor's office and say, hey, you know, your own numbers show that more kids are dying as a result of exposure to deadly drugs. What are you going to do this session to fix the imminent harm standard? What are you going to do this session to make sure that no more babies die? And when you email them, if they email you back, send it to us because I'd like to see what they say. But let's keep the pressure up. Let's start it early so that hopefully they're all in the right headspace come this legislative session to, I don't know, do the really controversial thing of making sure that babies don't die. Wow, we're really asking a lot of our elected leaders, aren't we? Unbelievable. All right, we got to talk about it. Graham Plattner. Wow, I would say fall from grace, but he wasn't, no, it's just, you know, he fell from a Nazi tattoo. So it wasn't really a far fall, but some new accusations, serious accusations against Graham Plattner in Maine, and Democrats have turned on him. First, could the market's biggest blind spots put your retirement portfolio at risk? I don't know about you. Is this the age where you start to only think about retirement every day? Every single day, I just think about what my retirement will look like, what I want to do. And it's like, Brandy, you do realize you might never be able to retire from a podcast.
For sure after 40, but you're almost there. So.
Well, and I have Zach and his team at Bulwark making sure that my retirement dreams can come true. And if you are not sure really whether your money manager is focused on what's happening, for instance, in energy or is properly focused on AI, et cetera, it's just worth a second opinion. I mean, we work so hard for everything we have, and we want to make sure it's properly protected against risk and that, you know, we're going to have what we need to live out our dream retirement. So join Bulwark Capital, Zach Abraham, for his free Market Blind Spot webinar, July 23rd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Totally free. You can get your questions answered by Zach, hear what he has to say about some of the biggest headlines, economic headlines nationally and globally. Again, July 23rd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific. It's live. It's free. Register now. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. While you're there, you can subscribe to Zach's daily podcast and find out how to follow him across all his social media platforms. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. All right. It's like, look, this stuff bothers the hell out of me. The guy had a Nazi tattoo, claimed he didn't know it was a Nazi tattoo, even though people he knew said he knew it was a Nazi tattoo. There have been multiple women who have come out and talked about his disturbing behavior. He was joking about raping home intruders and pleasuring himself in porta potties. Graham Plattner is just a weird guy. So why is it surprising anyone all of a sudden that there is now another credible woman who has come forward and saying that she was raped by him? This from Politico. A woman who dated Graham Plattner says he sexually assaulted her. The Maine Democrat denied the allegation, saying any accusation of non-consensual behavior is categorically untrue. So a little more from this article. A woman who dated Maine U.S. Senate candidate Graham Plattner says he forced her to have sex with him nearly 5 years ago, despite her repeated objections. The woman, a 41-year-old Maine resident named Jenny Rassiet, detailed the alleged incident to Politico in three interviews over the past 2 weeks. Politico also spoke with a man that she dated and confided in the years after the alleged incident, and reviewed documents, including emails between her and her therapist and messages between her and an acquaintance whom she warned against getting involved with Plattner years before he ran for office. So it does seem like there's a lot of... I mean, in any campaign like this, at these late stages, you have to do your due diligence. And so Politico was trying to get any information it could to show that she had told people about this before, that she had brought it up before. And frankly, 5 years ago is not a very long time ago. So when you're talking about, you know, things that come up in a political candidate's background, you know, 20, 30 years ago, whatever it is, I'm not saying they're irrelevant. But 5 years ago isn't very long ago if he's raping a woman 5 years ago. So she said she had an on and off again relationship with Plattner, who's now the, of course, Democratic Senate nominee in Maine, lasted for about 2 years before he entered her rural Maine home uninvited one night in late 2021, which that's breaking and entering. He didn't just enter the home. You know, what is that called? Entering somebody's home uninvited. It's just breaking and entering. He was deeply intoxicated. He forced himself on her while she repeatedly told him to stop. She said she cut off contact with him after telling him the encounter was not consensual. She said, I remember him grabbing my pelvis and being really forceful of me. She said, I remember the specific moment where I thought to myself, this is no longer my choice. So this comes out in Politico, and there had been whispers that there were more stories brewing about Plattner. This is obviously what those whispers were about. So he released a video statement shortly after the Politico story broke.
I wanted to directly address the troubling, serious, and false allegations against me. any accusation of non-consensual behavior is categorically false. Regardless of the inaccuracy of the reporting, but mindful of the political reality it will inflict, we are taking the time to reflect on the best path forward for the state that I love, the people that I love, the movement I belong to, and the goal of defeating Susan Collins. Throughout it all, you never turned your back on me, and I will not turn my back on you now. Every one of you deserves to see that vision come to fruition and see Susan Collins defeated, and we will use every tool at our disposal to do so. As Maine goes, so goes the nation. As always, thank you.
What is that last? I mean, how weird is this guy? First of all, what is with it? Always, it never ceases to amaze me. Like the political candidates who, for whatever reason, the system has decided this is the one. It's like, as goes Maine, so goes the nation. It's like, what do you think? You're like Abraham Lincoln? What is going on here? He's just a creepy guy. None of this surprises me. So apparently this was enough for the Democrats who have been defending him after all of the accusations. It's enough for them all in unison to say he's got to drop out of the race. And you can tell by his video that that's the direction that he's going. I think that they're doing some wheeling and dealing behind the scenes to see what that looks like. They want him replaced by a candidate that shares his vision, allegedly, but he's got to withdraw by July 13th. Then he can be replaced on the ballot. And so I think that you're going to see that happen. And then they'll just like Kamala Harris, they'll just install someone. But it's fascinating how the Democratic machine works. This from the Washington Post: top Democrats pull Graham Platner endorsements, call on him to end Maine's Senate campaign. So that includes Senator Elizabeth Warren, who said the best path forward is for him to step aside. Also, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand also calling on him, and Representative Ro Khanna, who's been a firm defender of Graham Platner, but he kind of shoehorned himself because the last time a woman came forward and said something, he said, well, she's not alleging that there was any sort of forceful sexual assault. And he said, that would be a red line for me. And so then that came out. And so he had really no choice but to withdraw his endorsement. And the big one, perhaps, who had been his biggest supporter in the Senate, Senator Bernie Sanders, he came out just this morning. It took him a little longer than the others. He said, I've spoken with Graham about the best path forward for Maine in light of these very serious allegations. I have recommended that he step aside. I'm not saying any one thing is going to lead to his decision, but I think the biggest thing is the DSCC said if he stays in, we won't spend any money on the race. So the committee, the Democratic committee that spends, you know, millions on some of the key races, in this case, Senate races, they said, and this came from Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer and Chair Kirsten Gillibrand, they said the allegations reported today are incredibly disturbing. Violence, abuse, and sexual assault are absolutely unacceptable. Graham Platner needs to immediately withdraw as the Democratic nominee for Senate and allow Maine Democrats the opportunity to choose a new candidate who can defeat Susan Collins. The DSCC will not invest in the Maine Senate race if Platner remains on the ballot. So that's, you can't win moving forward from that. If the DSCC isn't going to spend any money on your race, then you're dead in the water, especially in a race that's going to be really close. And so I think if not anything else, like the people pulling their endorsements of him, I think that is going to be the death knell for his campaign. I just think it's fascinating that, again, Chuck Schumer, who's, that's his statement, we're not spending any money on him. I mean, it didn't matter what came out about Graham Platner because their singular focus was not on whether this was someone fit to serve in the United States Senate. It was whether this was someone who could beat Susan Collins.
We're going to beat Susan Collins and take back the Senate.
You're standing behind Graham Platner, to be clear here.
We're going to beat Susan Collins and take back the Senate. We're going to beat Susan Collins and take back the Senate.
What are you going to do?
We're going to beat Susan Collins and take back the Senate. Last one. I endorsed Graham Platner. We're going to beat Susan Collins and take back the Senate. Thank you.
I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure anymore. I hate to laugh about it, but it's not surprising to me, I guess. Like, it was very clear this was a disturbed sexual pervert deviant. And now potentially criminally so. I would also wonder what the statute of limitations is in Maine for rape, because 5 years ago isn't very long ago. And so I would wonder if this is still within the statute of limitations. But here's the thing. Nicole, can you play Graham Platner's video again, his statement video for me, and maybe just the beginning of it?
I wanted to directly address the troubling, serious, and false allegations against me. Any accusation of non-consensual behavior is categorically false.
Okay. So stay in. I believe that. I do not believe. If you're saying you did not do this, stay in the race. Why would you give in to people if you think this is some sort of hit job against you? Stay in the race. Like, I don't want us to get in this routine politically where people can just hurl accusations. And even though you deny it, you know, and it's he said versus he said or whatever, stay in the race then. Stay in the race. Why would you drop out if you didn't do it? Why would you drop out if there's not going to be any evidence that can come out that says you did it? So I don't know. I would say to Graham Platner, stay in the race. By all means, you're saying you didn't do it. And what's also fascinating about all of this is the last woman who came out and talked about, you know, Graham Platner and his concerning behavior. She was a Republican. And so what did Democrats do? They dismissed it as a political hit job. Oh, she's a Republican. You know, she obviously has a motivation here. But they can't do it with this woman. She's on camera, on CNN, on Politico. She says she believes in Graham Platner's vision for America. But she just couldn't live with herself. And I don't like this. Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's gone off the deep end, she was like kind of attacking this woman and said, you know, don't come out with accusations years later when someone's running for public office. It's like, I disagree with that in the sense that for women who have been the victims of sexual assault, and I'm not saying this is true across the board because I haven't talked to every single woman who's ever been sexually assaulted, but I think for some, there's a little bit of a feeling of shame. Not that that's right, not that there should be shame or embarrassment. They don't want people to know what happened to them. And so if it's just sort of them and their lives, they can hide it, right? And they can keep it to themselves and try to move on. But then when you look at the prospect of someone being elected to the United States Senate, being in a position of authority, and it becomes an issue that's bigger than you, frankly. And I think that's sort of what this woman said is, one, she wants to move on with her life, and maybe this is a way to do that. But two, you know, she can't watch this guy, you know, go deny all these other accusations, be elected to the United States Senate, knowing, you know, according to her, that she was raped by him. So I don't know. I say, Graham, you know what? You defended the Nazi tattoo, all of these other things. You're saying you didn't do it. So by all means, stay in the race and see what happens. And he hasn't officially dropped out yet, I don't think. We're waiting for that. I would imagine it has to happen before the 13th.
They actually posted a job this morning.
Yeah, they posted a job. I saw that and it came up as in ads for me on X. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, job opening. And it was for like...
Strategist.
And it's like, I don't think anybody's taking that job because it's going to last... 6 more days.
It also said urgent.
Urgent, yes. I don't know. And again, I mean, you're going to install someone then, like you did Kamala Harris in the final few days here? What's going to happen? It's just outrageous. It's absolutely wild. All right. Speaking of people who've been accused of sexual assault, President Trump's Trump accounts. I'm sorry, that's a fair segue. It's a fair segue. That. Accused of. People are like, oh, he's a rapist. No, he has never been found guilty of rape or anything mm-hmm. like that. That's a total lie, but he has been accused. Is that any different? I mean, I'm sorry. What do you want? I'm not saying I don't support him.
Can you imagine if he would have stepped down?
Yeah, I agree. No, hey, I still support him, but I'm not disingenuous. I mean, I don't think he's a perfect guy. He's done a lot mm-hmm. of things and said a lot of things that for a long time I couldn't even vote for him over. And now I just realize that the evils this nation is facing require someone like him who is imperfect and is going to just push through no matter what.
We're all imperfect.
No, I'm perfect. I'm trying to think the worst thing that would come out from about me if I ran for office. What's the worst thing? Go ahead, Nicole.
I'm thinking.
Oh, she's like got a million things in her mind. She's like, I can't wait to go to the Times with all of this.
Right. Yeah.
I'm difficult to work with. You know, I'm quite a perfectionist. Anyway, what was I talking about? Oh, the Trump accounts are now live. Trump accounts are officially live. And so people were posting pictures of like their child's Trump account with $1,000 in it from the government.
I hope people don't. You know, deprive their babies.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about, Nicole. That's what we're going to talk about. People are losing their minds over the Trump accounts being called Trump accounts. But just so you guys understand how they work, because I touched base with my brothers too, like, hey, do my nephews have Trump accounts yet? And they're like, I don't think they qualify. I'm like, no, they do. They just might not qualify for the $1,000 from the government. Right. So you get a one-time $1,000 federal deposit for eligible babies. So these are babies just born in the last couple of years between January 1st, 2025 and December 31st, 2028. So you get that $1,000 deposit from the federal government once you enroll in the program, but you can start it for any child at under the age of 18, and you can contribute up to $5,000 a year. Employers can also contribute. They have like a QR code. You can send it to grandma and see if she'll dump some money into your kid's Trump account, which I think is pretty cool. Treasury officials have also said that companies like Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, BlackRock, Intel, JP Morgan Chase, Uber, Chipotle, Comcast, and Wells Fargo have agreed to contribute to accounts for their employees. So that's pretty cool. So the funds can be, so as soon as your kid turns 18, those funds are theirs. So I think another important part of this is telling your child, for the love of God, don't empty your Trump account at the age of 18, because it could, if fully funded, have millions of dollars in it by the time that you retire. Another cool announcement, Gwen Shotwell, who's the president and CEO of SpaceX, said, my husband and I are honored and thrilled to participate in the Invest America program and gift a share of our SpaceX stock to a Trump account for each of more than 2 million children across our great nation. Every American child under 18 can benefit from having a Trump account, but our gift specifically goes to the accounts of children ages 11 to 17 that live in areas with lower average household incomes, with a bit more emphasis for those that live near our Central Texas home. We have been fortunate in our careers and hope this gift encourages the next generation to continue the journey of enabling humanity to live and fly amongst the stars. And how cool is this? And here's what really bothers me about the reaction to this. So there was a member of Congress. What the heck was his name? Oh, yeah. Rep. Benny Thompson. And he was saying, it's safe to say I would pass on a Trump account. Trump University already taught us what happens when his name is on the brochure. Okay. You have such end stage TDS that you would tell parents to deprive their children, especially like liberal parents, right? They love free stuff from the government. If a Democrat had come up with this, they would be celebrated. They would be etching their face into rocks, okay? And now it's like, oh, Trump did it. It's a Trump account. So no, don't set your child up for success. The other thing is, all these people on the left who accuse companies of being greedy, horrible, not paying their fair share, not contributing. And you have all these companies stepping forward, and yes, they get a tax break on it, but stepping forward to just give millions and millions of dollars, and in this case, stock benefits, to kids that they don't know. And still, the left is vilifying them. Oh, yeah, well, they're just doing it for a tax write-off. Who cares why they're doing it? Do the kids get the money or do the kids not get the money? Isn't that all that matters? I do, though, and I asked you guys this on our show poll, which we'll get to coming up next, but I do wonder, would it be different if it wasn't called a Trump account, right? And Trump has talked about this before. He claims that it wasn't his idea to put his name on it.
This is not me, and putting the name on it was not my idea. That was a whole group of people that passed legislation, because this is all made possible only by the passage of the Great Big Beautiful Bill. All of a sudden, I see my name on it in the bill. But I'm very proud to have my name. They think it would sell. They said it'll sell better if your name's on. I said, look, leave it on. But I did not. I just want to. I did not ask for it. Michael, is that a correct statement? Did I ever go to you and say, Michael, don't put up the money unless they use my name? No. But I have done that in other cases. I will. In certain other cases, I've done that. Right, Scott?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I don't believe that he didn't want his name on it. He puts his name on everything. But, you know, he says he didn't, so I'm not sure. Maybe they thought or knew he would want his name on it.
He said he approves. He just said, I didn't ask for it.
Sure. Okay. All right. So I asked you guys, whether you think that using the president's name on it, it was a mistake. Just the reason that some families won't, like, do it or whatever. So, Nicole, yes or no? Was it a mistake to call it a Trump account?
No, I don't care. I actually think I have a, you know, I think that these are going to live on. These kids that are getting this money are going to cash this in 30, 40, 50 years when he is long gone. And this is a big deal. I think that he deserves that recognition from it. I don't think it would have happened with anyone else. They wouldn't have prioritized it in this way. And, you know, he's going to be in the history books and all this other crap is going to be said about him. But give these kids who are learning all this negative crap about him in school 30 years from now, or 20 years from now, whatever it is in college, and give them this money and say, now, how do you feel about Trump?
Well, somebody pointed out something interesting in the comments. I mean, Obamacare.
Exactly.
And yes, it was the Affordable Care Act, but colloquially, it's always been known as Obamacare.
And he called it that.
He called that. Mm-hmm. Democrats call it that. Obamacare, Obamacare, yeah. Obamacare.
And if he wants this to be his legacy, I think that's a great legacy.
Yeah. Nathan says it doesn't matter what the name is, as long as it's helping kids. And I would say also, like, if, you know, because my thought is, well, more people will use it if it's not called a Trump account. But that's up to them, right?
Yeah.
That's up to them.
If they feel bad for their children, kids, right? But, you know.
Let's see. Julie, I figure that the people who would take advantage of these accounts will be conservative, so it's a win for the right team. Those with TDS only shoot themselves in the foot because they cannot give their children a hand up in life just because of the name of the account. E, can we all just take a moment to appreciate a president that makes such a thing possible? My life would have been different if Johnson to Reagan would have done this for us. Don't care about the name. It's simply a great investment. Yeah, and it helps, you know, and I think there's a lot of Americans that aren't involved in the stock market at all. And so, you know, just to be able to have, and it's very simple. I was reading online, people are saying, no, it's really easy to set up.
Yeah.
And then after that, having a QR code you can send to friends and family, aunties, for instance, and say, hey, you want to donate some money this Christmas to my child's Trump account? I think it's a cool idea.
And for the future, you never know. I mean, like SpaceX putting money into it. There's going to be there's so many opportunities for people to give back. So who knows what the economic situation will be in a few years then.
Right.
And those accounts could grow significantly.
Oh, and then what if they shrink and then people are going to be like, my child lost all their money. And it's like,
they're
okay,
in the safest form. Yes. But yeah. Well, then that'll be the next president's problem.
Yeah. Well, I think what will happen is they'll change the name. The next time there's a Democrat in office, I believe they will change the name and they will no longer be called Trump accounts.
But they'll be established as Trump accounts. So sure. It's a law. So
I mean, it'll be petty of them. But anything Trump put his name on, I think they're taking his name off. Like it's, Trump RX.
Yeah. I mean, can you change a law's name? Yeah. I guess you can change the law's name, but it's still that in the record.
Matthew Cook says it's a mistake from the standpoint that there are unhinged people that will avoid anything with the name Trump, even if that means denying financial investment for their children's future. And I'm sorry, I didn't tell you the results of the poll. 70% say no, it wasn't a mistake to call it Trump accounts. So, yeah, if you're really going to not take that like free $1,000 from the government for your child's future because it's called a Trump account, you need to have your head examined. And
I just think it's like the best intentions. You're just trying to help these kids. So, I mean, there's no selfishness about it. And
you're getting the private sector to give a bunch of money. That it's just ridiculous. Silliness. People have lost their minds. All right. Let's get to comments from the live stream, shall we?
You can stick around for this, I guess.
Okay, bye. Looking up for Jesus. Four decades of Democrat rule have made Seattle. Is that because, like, there's pee all over?
It's kind of like smelly urine in the alleys, I guess.
Have made Seattle in Washington State anything but world class. They polished a turd for a week, and now they think they're saints. That was really aggressive, but yes. And then he ends it with, F off, Washington. Mm-hmm. All right.
So from Papa Woody, if you want the state to be successful, get the government out of people's business. Let the truck driver drive the truck. Let the farmers farm. Let the builders build and stop taxing. Stop over regulating. Yep. Just stop.
100%. Greg Olakis, in this current climate in Washington state, I can't see how anyone would want to continue running a business in this state. You can only pass so much onto the consumer until they finally say, nope. Yeah, I agree.
So I grabbed this comment.
Okay.
I think it's from a bit of a troll, the Blue Texan, who often kind of harasses. I mean, I don't know about harasses. It makes little
Are
comments.
Are you a troll, the Blue Texan?
I don't know.
Who cares? That's all right.
But he says, capitalism has failed us all. Wake up. With advancements in AI, America can make socialism work. And I just thought that was an interesting.
I'm just going to assume that's sarcasm.
No, no. He's very blue. This person is very much on the
I'm just going to assume that sarcasm
train.
Just so I don't have to believe people are that dumb.
But
all right.
You know, I've never seen it. Oh, AI can
AI make socialism work. AI is what will finally make socialism work.
Yeah.
Yes. So you acknowledge that it hasn't worked up to this point? Is that what you're saying? On the march to save babies from progressive lunacy, Crystal Benson, as a grandmother, getting a child out of the situation is next to impossible. Grandparents have zero rights in Washington state. The only thing that should matter is the right of that child to live.
Mm-hmm.
Only thing that should matter. And if you want to keep families together, you got to keep them alive. So let's keep them alive long enough for parents to get back on their feet.
Can we not let them allow people in those positions to make common sense decisions for a child? I think that's a key. And
Miranda just commented, oh no, he is so serious. Okay, the Blue Jackson does believe AI will make social work. Hey, thanks for watching the show, though. Good to have you here. Thank you for your input, kind sir or madam.
From Brian, why march to the governor's mansion? There's nobody there.
I don't know. I think Bob probably does stay at the governor's mansion. Jay never did. He liked his place. Jay Inslee once told me, we're standing in the governor's mansion, getting ready to do an interview with him during the pandemic. And I said, wow, it's beautiful in here. And he says, I don't know. We find it kind of stuffy. And I'm thinking, what an ass. Like, it's this beautiful home. And yes, it's like older decoration, you know, but it's meant to be regal and all these things.
Yes.
And I thought it was beautiful. It's kind of stuffy. I guess when you spend 12 years in it, you might start finding it
stuffy. It's also an interesting comment when you're not paying for it.
It was just the weirdest. It always stuck with me. I was sort of like, okay. Could have been like, yeah, isn't it gorgeous? It's really an honor to live here. No, it's stuffy. Kathleen, keeping the families together, even if it kills the children. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah, Democrat stitching Graham Plattner. Country guy says, dude, you have been dropped like a hot potato. Even the socialists are running in the other direction.
Well, and I
mean,
you know, when Democrats want to make a move on something, they are very coordinated in the way in which they do that. Look at Eric Swalwell fall from grace like that. Mm-hmm. When they're ready, they had all this. You're telling me that his campaign didn't know. They knew. They were just like hoping it didn't get out. And then when Politico started asking questions and reaching out for comments, Democrats are like, all right, we're dropping him. We're all doing it at the same time. Go execute. So I don't know. But are you really going to be able to, in the matter of a couple days, find the right person, get excitement around that person and whatever it is, and all to get milquetoast Susan Collins out of office?
I know.
Susan's not even your biggest enemy. I mean, she's like has helped Democrats in a variety of fronts. It's just they just care about warm bodies. Right Meow says it's amazing that this is their red line for Democrats, but literally so many other horrible things they do are okay. And I mean, you know, I think credible allegations of rape, you know,
I don't think this is the red line, though. This is the red line because they're being forced to say it's the red line.
Well, it's the red line because now it's a Democrat victim, right?
Well, I just think I think this is pressure. I think this is public pressure over, and they've known all of this for a while. It's the public pressure that finally has gotten to him.
Well, and also, you're so early still. The election's in November. What else is going to come out about this guy? You know, at some point, you got to be like, we got to cut our losses on this one.
Yeah.
On Trump accounts officially being live, you want to do watermelons?
Watermelon says, if it means liberals won't get Trump accounts because of the icky name, then oh no.
Oh no. Matthew, Benny Thompson and Dems would rather kids believe government is there to solve their problems than to be self-sufficient and have money when they become adults. And technically, the government is involved in solving this problem. I mean, this is a government sort of endeavor, but, you know, something that allows the private sector to be involved.
Government facilitated.
Government's facilitated with the first $1,000. So, all right. Good comments, you guys. Nicole, thank you. We'll get to our closing sanity check, which is such a good one, in a moment. First, if you are a landlord in the state of Washington, you're probably wondering, oh my gosh, can I continue to do this? Well, if you're doing it on your own, it might be tough because there's changing rules and regulations all the time. So you need to have someone like the Rental Housing Association of Washington in your corner. Become a member today. It's $260 a year, and they've got your back on an individual basis, trying to help you navigate, you know, screening, forms, all the changing rules and regulations. And they're also every day of the year defending private property rights, whether it's in a court of law or down in Olympia. So go to rhawa.org. Also check out some of the educational events and other events that they have coming up. I think I'm speaking at one. Nicole, when is that? Is that coming up in this month? Put you on the spot there.
September, October. So October, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, I usually speak at a couple of their events every year about media coverage of housing issues and stuff. So rhawa.org, rhawa.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers.
Also, happy birthday, Bea Larson.
Happy birthday, Bea Larson.
I'd throw that in there. I just saw that.
Yes, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Bea Larson. Happy birthday to you. Let's get to our closing sanity check. Gosh, I cannot underscore how much I love this clip for so many reasons. So there's a journalist in the UK named Camilla Tominey, and she was interviewing Labour Party Health Secretary James Murray, who James Murray has, you know, oh, trans women are women too. That has been his previous stance. However, he has had a change of heart, and it turns out he doesn't believe that women can have penises.
You are quite pro-trans, aren't you? You've appeared in campaigns and things. I mean, do you think a woman can have a penis? Because you did previously. It's an important question for a health secretary to answer.
No, I don't.
So you've changed your mind?
Yes.
Why have you changed your mind?
Well, I think a lot of us have been thinking about this issue over recent years. And, you know, I wouldn't now say that, for instance, trans women are women. I think that biological sex is important.
But you must have known that before. You're very well educated. You went to St. Paul's private school. I was reading this morning.
I love her.
How on earth could you have previously thought that a woman can have a penis?
Well, I think this is an issue that a lot of us have thought about in recent years. And I think there's a difference between sex and gender. I think that when it comes to sex, biology is what matters. And that's why...
Do you owe women who called for, who were gender critical and then were cancelled an apology?
Look, I don't think people should be cancelled. I think people should be allowed to have their views.
But part of the reason these women were cancelled is because people like you denied biological sex and then they were hounded on by the trans lobby.
That is how every journalist in the world should question elected leaders who have said that men can become women and that trans women are women. Just absolutely brilliantly done and good for him. Hey, I'm all about people changing their minds. Even if you had a completely indefensible, unscientific position, if you want to come back to the side of rational thought and sanity and fight for what's true and what's right, by all means, we're more than happy to have you.
It might be a little hard on you, but yes. I also hope that he had a... Yeah, I'm sorry. Moment and moving on. If he would have just said that, she wouldn't have been so attacky.
Yeah. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you'd like to support our show, you can do that for just $5 a month. And that helps us continue our independent journalism and commentary and get all this content out to you. So go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show for $5. While you're there, you can shop our merch store. We've got hats, we've got totes, we've got stickers. And that's it. We'll see you tomorrow.